I'm Richard Lannan, Rhymes with Cannon, and this is the Glazing Insider Industry Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Nozzle. The Nozzle team captures photos, videos and drone footage from locations across the UK to create content for your social media and case studies for your website. To find out more about Nozzle's pay-as-you-go and monthly packages, visit nozzle.media. Tim, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much. Good to see you. Thank you for having me.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
How did you get into the fenestration world?
I was 19. A fairly difficult time for family reasons, etc. And I went through a period of not really knowing what to do. Uni, left A-levels. Education system, I think would be fair to say, didn't suit me. And it was my dad. He said, right, you're going to get a job. Go out and get a job. And I did many part-time bits and bobs and really messed around. And I ended up moving to Cheltenham with my dad back in 2000. And applied for a job as a order processor for a company called Cotswold. Knew nothing of it, but it got my dad off my back. Got the job. And I think partly to do with, we knew someone from the golf club, so I think that helps. I don't think I stood out necessarily. But I turned up Monday, Tuesday. And on the Wednesday, I didn't go into work. I hated the place. Whether that was me as a young kid and or whether it was truly a cultural issue, the story will develop, but we get there. And Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I went off the rails for a week and didn't turn up. And I remember the Sunday night, falling out with my dad. And I said, I'm not going there. I'm not going back in. Monday morning came and my door goes. And it was my boss at the time. She was the owner of the business. A lady who I've grown to respect beyond belief as we get there, but she knocked the door and she said to me, if you're going to quit, you're going to do it in front of me. She waited outside for me to get dressed, showered, changed, drove me into work. And the honest truth is, I was too scared to quit. That was the honest truth, I was too scared to quit. And I sat there and at the end of the day said, we haven't been to see me, so I expect to see you tomorrow. Again, through fear, I just nodded and I came in the next day, Tuesday. A week went past, maybe 2 weeks went past. Leslie, her name was. But anyone who knows Cotswold will know Leslie. And she called me in a couple of weeks later and said, so you're staying then? And sheepishly I apologised. And she said to me, look, I was where you were. She started from the shop floor. She started manufacturing, worked her way up to owning the place. And she said, I did a very similar thing when I was your age. And the owner of the business then, who was the founder, gave me a shot because I should have been sacked. And his ask to me was, there'll be someone you meet along your way one day and you have to return the favour. She said, now you're the favour I've returned. Now you have to do it later on in life for yourself. And we hit it off. We just got on great. She wasn't only the business, she was MD, but back in 2007, she then did an MBO with the sales director. And I was 6 years in, and I think like many people in the industry, once you're in, you're stuck, in a good way. But if it wasn't for her, who knows? Who knows where I would have went? And I just managed to progress through the business. I owe her a lot, really. Still speak to her now. She sold in 2014, so been out of the business for 7-8 years now, but still stay in touch. She was a key influence in my life, that's for sure. So yeah, mad how it happened. But if you had said then you're going to be 22 years in,
wouldn't believe it.
Never would have thought it. But I think it's a lot for a lot of people. You're in and you're in for a good period. I've never travelled about. I've never wanted to do that. I'm Cotswold through to the core. I kind of see myself as brand ambassador. That's the role I want and need to have. I think bring a bit of authenticity to it. Jumping around within the industry can happen a little bit too much. So I decided to stay loyal. I live in the town, just down the road from yourself. We're very close. I live in the town. I love the town. I made good friends. And my family, my wife worked here. That was a controversial time. Some people listening will know that story. And she didn't work for long because living and working together didn't work. But so Cotswold's literally given me a livelihood, family, kid. I mean, it's crazy what it's done. But yeah, that first week, I'd have never guessed. Never have guessed I'd be here.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she saw something in you from that day, enough to come and get you, which is fascinating.
Really, I'm not sure whether she saw as I say, education for me was school was an interruption to football during lunchtime. That's what it was to me. That's what I wanted to do. But there's something which I realised as I've come to where I am today is I've always cared. I've always given a damn about what I do. Whether it's personal or work, I've always wanted to do a decent job. If there's a customer problem, I want it sorted. If there's an employer sorted, I want to get problems sorted for people. And I think that was Leslie. She was also the same. She didn't come out through a stereotypical educational route. She worked from grassroots up. And I think she just saw that. I just cared about what I did, whether it was entering an order at the time or whether it was making sure delivery went out. That's what I wanted to do. And so I think that's maybe where we had a lot of common ground. Mm. She was the same. She was driven for the brand and driven for the people. And I think she understood my background, which was nice. It was really good.
So what sort of happened next then? Because the way you're talking with potential travelling, it sounds like there could have been offers.
You know what? Not as many as you think. And I think there's a lot of reason because I've never gone looking, number one. Never gone looking and I never would have. There's been the odd approach of things, but I've shut it down quite quick because I've been loyal to this brand. And I was on a career journey. Every time I had an itch, I was on the next thing. There's enough here to keep me going. And I've always treated the brand as my own. I own as many shares in this business as you do, but I treat it as my brand. And I think that's really hard to detach yourself and then move away from what is your baby. And we'll get down the road of the recent times in Cotswold, because that's been a real interesting path. But the last year has really given me a chance to reinstate that. It was always going to be difficult to move away from something I was so passionate about. That's probably the main reason.
Mm. Yeah, no, I like that. And I also like not working with your wife as well. I'm similar. I've tried it. I'm not a fan.
It's horrific.
And I admire people that they do, that it works really well in some companies. But I think, I don't know whether it's something to do with them owning it. I don't know. I couldn't work it out.
No, for me, several people listening will know my wife through the industry. She was with us for about 4 or 5 years. We were married when she was still working here, but it was really evident real quick that one of us was going to move on, and she's far more talented and educated than I am, so it's easier for her to move on, right? Yes. So that was the way it was. It's mad when I look back at what Cotswold is. It's given me all that as well. So, but working together, living together, I know few that have succeeded. I know many who haven't. So that ended quite a while ago when she left. But it's quite nice. She understands Cotswold, though.
Yeah,
so it's quite nice bouncing it. When you want to have a bit of a moan, there's a bit of reference there for her.
That is definitely so. Yeah, we've talked about this. There's people, you sort of have your circle, don't you? And they understand your business and what you're going through that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, partners and, you know, they're there from a supportive point of view, but they might not understand exactly why it annoys you and why it's happened again.
Yeah. So. And I travel a lot with the business, and she used to do that, and so she understands where I'm going, knows some of the customers here. So there's a visual there and an understanding of what's going on. So she's massively supportive of what I do, which is great, and appreciates what Cotswold's done for us. So yeah,
brilliant.
It's nice.
So where are we up to now then with the journey?
Well, the last 5-6 years have been different. Very different. In 2014, Cotswold was bought by Cordwell, American company, spring balance company. For much of that period, I was still heading up Cotswold. But actually, my boss was a guy called Eric Mertz in America. He's the CEO of the group. We got on great. Had a fantastic relationship with him. And through that period, we decided we're going to set up our own supply chain. We've operated in India for, my first trip was 2006, I think. So long, long time.
Wow.
We decided we wanted to control our supply chain. So Eric and I put a bit of a plan together, and I headed up the Indian operations for a period of time where we put in factories, put in supply chains, set up a sales unit because the Indian economy has grown massively. And that's all part of the Cotswold Group. And that was going really, really well. Cordon was owned by an American family for 130 years. Unfortunately, there was a family tragedy back 2 years ago, and they decided to sell the business. But they wanted to retain Cotswold. It was part of their plan was to retain Cotswold. It's a well-known brand, a popular brand. So they decided to sell off the Cordor side of the business. Cordor was sold a year ago yesterday.
Wow.
June the 20th, 22. And Cotswold remained independent. And the owners asked, did I want to head up the new Cotswold business? And what was really interesting for me, two main issues. One, as I said earlier, it's my brand. It's my baby. It's everything I've ever done. So there's a care and a want to do that. But what was really different was the group had its own supply chain. So we could manufacture products without the reliance of subcontract. We're in a country which is geopolitically safe, should we say, for want of a better word. And I think the industry has a lot of reliance on China, and that's okay. We knew India. We understand India. Two sides to it was obviously it allowed us to control our supply chain, but also build a base out in India to sell. India's now the largest population in the world, 1.5 billion people. So the market in India is going crazy, and we've got a market and a mill out there. And I think in today's world, that is really, really important. So a year ago, the owners retained Cotswold. We remained fully independent. We headed it up and we went about putting a new team together. I think what made Cotswold brand was people who cared. And that's not just myself. There's a whole world of people out there. Alan Hartley, Steve Lewis, even people days gone by, they're just synonymous with the brand as a name. And we lost a bit of that. So day one was get the old band back together, get the old experience back together. People you know you can work with, they know you, you know them, we all know each other's skills. But we're all driven by one basis that we give a damn. And we set our logo around that, actually called Live the Brand, because I didn't think give a damn on the wall was probably correct. So we put Live a Brand. And it means just that. It's going back to what we were good at. We sell good products, but it's backed up with people in service. And if there's a problem, we sort. We all have our problems. But being flexible and nimble, able to react real quick. And so we're independent. Year one, we've kind of gone back to where we were in 2016, and I think it's great. We've spent time on the building. We've spent money on the building, should I say. We've spent time on the people. We've got a fantastic mix of experience from the past and new people coming through, because I think that's one area we can help. The talent pool below certain points of the industry are not quite where they need to be. So we've brought in a couple of apprentices, particularly in technical, to help bring through and train. But all around our values, which is, and that's underlined by this Live the Brand logo. So we become independent. I've got the opportunity to head it up, which I love. We've got our own supply chain. And I think we're in a real good place to help the industry. We don't have the biggest portfolio of products. We are 90% of our product is friction stays. So there are some auxiliary products around that, child safety catches, pulling wedges, etc. But at its core, we're friction stays. And I think we do a good job of it. So we're back to basics. We're back to caring about our customers. And more importantly, you know what? We're having fun doing it. And we say that in our meetings. If we can't create an environment that the staff enjoy, then I'm doing something wrong. So for us, smiles on faces, hard work, but smiles on faces when you do it.
Wow. So a few questions. I said to you before we started this, that I remember Cotswold from my servicing days, and I've popped many of your hinges on, and you know, it was something that for me at one point I saw you as the Hoover of the industry. Yeah. People would say Cotswold hinges. I'll grab a couple of, you know, a pair of Cotswold, and we knew what you meant.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe that you were based here. I remember coming to collect something once and you were just here. How did you go from Cheltenham to India?
I mean, you're right. The brand, we're in a great position. The brand, we sell into just about 60 countries now around the world. The brand is bigger than reality, I'll be honest. And that's a great place to be. That's a real great place to be. Early 2000s, we were shipping out tens of hundreds of thousands into China before it all reversed on us and China started to become the low-cost manufacturer country it was. We had agents out in China, sales teams. We had a shared office out there that we employed a couple of guys. China was a huge market for us. China did what China do, right? They copied, and the Chinese market really started to hit home in this industry around 2007 and 8. And back in those days, there was really only two brands in friction space. In the early days, there was certainly only two brands, and everyone will know what they are. China allowed the expansion where, and we've seen a lot of it in the industry. Distributors have tried, and some have won, some have failed, become brands in their own right. And as China developed and moved through, it allowed them to do that. So we had to adapt. China has its obvious advantages. India has those obvious advantages around cost of production. And we've got to compete in a world where commodity items are. There's a certain premium people will pay for a brand and a product, but not top end. So we had this balance of overseas manufacturing and internal manufacturing. And we would use that balance to create a package of products for the industry, which worked. We went to India. Our products were specified in India from a sales point of view. I think the first time a Cotswold product was sold in India was 1982 or 3, I can't, with a distributor of ours. We grew the brand. So we already knew India. We knew the people. We knew the market. We knew how to run it. And it was just the first, obvious first step. So we set our first factory up in 2007. And that was an experience. Mixing culture, people, climates. Yeah, that was a real challenge because that was really early in Indian time to be doing it. Right up to the latest factory in Pune is 2 years old, state-of-the-art, massive, massive journey that's been on. So for us, it was the inevitable shift that had to happen, but we also want to react. We got a lot of people who want to customize a product. They want to change an opening angle. They want to adapt a stack height, whatever it might be. We can do all that locally. So there's not any lead times and wasting around. So we needed to be competitive. We on the same hand, we need to be nimble. Mm. And we tried to mix that blend. I think it's worked. But really, our entry into India was born out of our sales out there. And traveling from a sales point of view, building up a network of people and going that route. So in 2007, the first one was done. I say the second factory went up. We started in February 2020.
Ah, right.
That was a tough year. We've got a lot of close friends and colleagues now in India, and they had it real tough. They had it real tough. Where we were locked down a little bit, these guys were. I mean, basics like oxygen were the issue. So we were a good 18 months behind where we needed to be. So we're actually only really a year into the new factory, probably, in serious production. But if you see where the first one is, to now the new one. I mean, it's state of the art. It's an unbelievable premises, and so we're really happy to have it. But owning your supply chain, I can't say how much flexibility that gives us. Customers will say, "I've got this project coming down the road. Fine, I just move production around. We control production out of here, so we can just be nimble." That's really important. That's really important not to lose that fact. So it's worked well, but the brand, yeah, it's synonymous. Cheltenham, the three leading brands in the market that everybody know, all started within a 500-yard radius of this building.
Wow.
Yeah, some are still here, some aren't. But yeah, Cheltenham, which is pretty much a retail spa town, known for its races more than it is anything else, right?
Exactly,
and then friction space is probably the next thing. But if you're not in the industry, if you don't know, you don't know, right? Yeah. And most people, when they see the name Cotswold, if you're in the region, the region is Cotswolds, so people don't have a, if you're outside the industry, you wouldn't have a clue.
No.
But yeah, so from Little Cheltenham became the hub of Friction Stays for many years until the late 2000s. And then a big switch started to happen. And there's many brands now. There are many brands. But I think we do something slightly different, which is why we tend to do pretty well.
In fact, thinking about it, so how the Friction Stay itself, was it designed here, the original? How far are we going back for that?
1974. We're 50 years old next year.
Wow.
Valentine's Day.
No.
Yeah, 14th of February, 1974. So 50 years old next year. Yeah. There was a product in the US market, which was a two-bar, like peg stay, almost.
Oh, yeah.
And they're still, still real popular in America. I mean, American windows are very different to our window system. And the founder of Kotsol was a guy called Jurek Ronski, Polish guy. Just him and his business partner came, I don't know the exact story, but came over, saw the product, realised there was a... And we started in 1974 in a little shed just up the road. And that little shed got outgrown real quick. And then the PVC and so on. So, but originally for timber windows, your typical joiner making a timber window. And it was at the time, it was revolutionised what we did.
Yeah.
So, so Cotswold had the first in the UK, in Europe. There was a sort of product in America, but it wasn't a true friction stay. So truly were the first in the world from what we know today. And then we're 50 years old. So that's, we're going to have a few celebrations next year on that. I think it's quite a feat in an industry which has had a rough name at times.
Yes.
It just goes to show brand, people trust brands. And I think brands, it'll go through a cycle, and as management teams change and products develop, it goes through a cycle, but people trust brand. And it's, you say Hoover, it's Dyson now, isn't it? Whatever people start to trust, it's in. And so we're delighted to have the brand presence that we do. We're just now bottling on the care after that. So synonymous with Friction Stays is Cotswold.
That's it. So it's kind of, does that mean you've always got to have a location here now?
Look, I think it's massively important, regardless of what market you're truly in, you have to have a location. To what level that is another story. In India, we've got market, a massively growing market. We've got manufacturing and we've got sales. We've got the same in the UK. As we expand regions, we do loads in South America. Loads. And that's probably one market we're never going to truly go and set up in. Well, I say no. It's not in the foreseeable future. But we do have sales presence out there. And so we try and make sure that we're covered on both. You take the rest of Europe, it's a different product style. I mean, only the UK really uses friction stays in quantity. India, the UK, and South America, they are biggies. Wow. So we don't do a lot in Europe. We do a little bit, some bobs, and commercial buildings we'll do. So that's our play in commercial areas, so curtain walling, that sort of stuff. On the heavy duty side of the business.
A lot of it's tilt and turns though, isn't it? So they just,
the Mediterranean belt is huge. Yeah. But on the commercial sector and the curtain walling, that's where but they're project based and they're long term. The heartbeat of Friction Stay sales is still the UK. India is the UK 15 years ago.
Right.
It's a product we understand and a profile. All the systems houses are starting to go in there. So the UK systems houses are starting to open up. The big aluminium boys are now starting to jump in there. And everybody's realising we don't need to develop anything here. The Indian market is accepting and moving towards the UK-style outward opening window. So that's going to be massive for us. And we'll always be in the UK. We'll always be in Cheltenham. I like the fact most people are local.
Yes.
To work, I think that helps bring team spirit together. I think the furthest anyone drives to get into office is about 20 minutes.
Wow.
So, I think it's important. And so head office is Cheltenham. That's what we are. And I can't see that changing.
A few changes in the last few years or so, but do you feel sort of stable now and sort of on the growth strategy again?
Yeah. A couple of angles to growth, I guess. Number one, just getting people back out there with connections that we've had for many years, re-establishing that network. And we're growing on the back of that, for sure. So we've got some nice business coming in. The team that's come back, Steve Lewis, Alan Hartley, a couple of new products that we've always wanted to do. But in a bigger group, it's slightly harder to maybe roll out.
Yeah.
They will come out second half of this year, which will open a slight new angle to us. Maybe the one area we have a slight gap in our range, so that will nicely fill that gap. But we're friction states. That's what we try to be. We try not to take ourselves down paths that we're not good at. So we have some strategic partnerships. I know someone you've had on the podcast before, Mark Bromley of Vantis.
Yeah.
We do a lot with Mark. We have a great package together. So Mark is a guy I've known for years. He was one of the guys back in the early days who helped me through the industry, really. And so we've always said we would do more together. We never really had the opportunity to do it. But in the last couple of years, we've really now pulled together resource. So he has gaps in portfolio friction states, and we have locks and handles. And so we work together and try and pull our resource together. And a lot of customers like that. And we've done a lot of networking together. We've done a GMF bike ride together and had to room with him for 2 weeks, which was and if you listen, Mark, it was a chore. So but we do a lot with Avantis.
Is that the trip where Paul Godwin was driving the
support van?
The support van. Like a maniac.
Yeah. That's a great trip. I got into GMF late, actually. Gary Morton was a customer, and I got into it later than I should have. So we actively try to support GMF where we can, so that's great. But the Mark's been great. So we've got some new products coming out, and we help each other a little bit where there's some relationships or there's some portfolio gaps that we try and share. So yeah, and I think a lot of people in the industry know we have quite a strong network together. So works for us both. And you know what? They're very similar to us, family owned, family brand. I mean, Ryan, you know, Ryan's in the whole business. They're great people. So we enjoy working with those, and it helps us if somebody says, "Well, we're buying this whole package." No problem. We pull our resource together, and that's really helped us moving forward.
And I suppose then with India and the systems companies going in, aluminium, all of those, it makes you sort of the easy option and a strategy to be a strategic partner because you're there.
Absolutely. More than that, we're not just there, we're specified in a lot of them already.
Right.
So be it aluminium, be it PVC. Not all, I should add, but a good chunk, and we're working with the others to make sure we are. So when they move into, say, particularly pick India, and some of the biggest names that you know are going in, we're automatically specified, and we've got a factory on the doorstep. It saves duties, saves lead times, saves cash. The advantages for having local manufacturing with a European specification, the systems house are now seeing.
Yeah.
They're really seeing the potential in India. We work with them all in India. Some was overnight because we were already specified through what we do here in Europe or UK. Some we've had to work on and develop. We've put new test rigs and facilities in here in Cheltenham. So we now have a five-cylinder test rig, which is pretty... at the time we put it in, we said, it's got a few. It's not enough, I'll be honest, because the amount of testing now we're getting through and getting done. Whether it's aluminium PVC, whether it's 90mm systems, which is becoming massive for us. And that's another angle for us. I mean, we take what we do in the commercial world and we bring it to the 90mm systems that are coming out onto the market in the UK. We can help Systems House leapfrog development because we're not redeveloping a product. We're just utilising what we're doing in an aluminium sector, in a curtain walling system. And we're able to do rapid testing for them here. We're able to give... within 3 days, we'll give them a 25,000 cycle test, indicative test that, yep, we're on the right lines. So working with systems houses is really key for us. Like everything, it's consolidating. I think there's a few that are going to be, we know the Duraflex news.
Yeah.
The last 10 days. Yeah. I think there will be some more consolidation. I think partnering with the right people is just critical. And just as there is in hardware, there's certain brands in profiles that you want to be with and you want to get specified on. So we were really hard on that. And we got a team of technical guys in India that do, they call them PMU tests over there, and they are testing daily, weekly on up to sort of 2.5 meter top end windows. They're huge things on commercial. We're taking those results and we bring them into 90 mil systems here in the UK. So our technical knowledge across the globe has really helped fast track some certain things going on here. And the, you know, I am one believer that triple glazing is good. I know there's still some will say yes, some will say no. It's all driven by systems houses, and everybody's looking at ways of coping with bigger, heavier weights.
Yes.
So as hardware people, we have to be able to hold those weights. And we're working with everybody now to try and get that done. So we're already specified. It's a quick jump and very easy jump for the systems house. Where we're not, we can really quickly do some testing with them in India because the product is on their doorstep. And then, you know, just from global footprint point of view, we're not shipping product around the world and lead times are reduced. So that base has really worked well for us in India.
Well, with that in mind, I just sort of went to, like you say, things are getting heavier now. You're going to have to sort of hold them. But what's to stop someone just setting up tomorrow, starting making hinges? Is there compliance they've got to jump on, or?
Look, I mean, I guess that's the same for any product, but the answer is simple, really. There's it's not cheap. I should start there. And there's many systems houses that have looked at that, and I've spoken to them. They've looked at it, but the investment, the cost, and some of the, particularly the aluminium, their big bread and butter really is tilt and turn. Friction stays is there's two or three big geographical areas, but in the grand scheme of their business, it's not huge. So you can copy, as China have, you can copy a standard 10-inch topper. What we look to do is be 2 years ahead of that. And what we're doing with 90 mil systems, if you take what is on the market now and you put that into the 90 mil system with your triple glaze weights, it's going to fail. A lot of them are not, a lot of products are at critical failure point in the market. Cost reductions. There's a lot of product which is a critical failure. And we've pushed our products to the limit. Triple glazing started 5 years ago, really, probably. And we have a product now called Extreme, which has been through three evolutions, but it's at its end. And the next stage needs a next product. So we've got this year, we're taking our commercial knowledge and bringing it to the domestic PVC world. So we just try and stay ahead. I think it's just development. And as long as you keep things moving forward, it stops other people coming in at the end of the market. And there's always going to be a competition for the lower end product. That's reality we live in. Where we differentiate is the special products, and we're ready for the next range of systems. We're ready for the 90 mil and triple glazed products now. We're ready to go. We have some sales already. Small fry, but it's working. I'm not sure how many other people are. And what's been nice, though, I think with this generation of profile designs, the profile house has really come to the hardware guys.
Right.
And whereas in the past, and we've said this to many profile guys, it was, there's our profile, make a product that works. We've probably sat in 7 or 8 system house meetings this year where this is what we want to do. Have you got anything and how can we adapt? And that collaboration is far more now because the systems house are knowing that I can't do this and I can't do that. And it's easier if we can use this. So I guess just staying at the forefront of development, keep changing. As I say, there will be copies of everything, right, eventually. But our development is keeping us ahead of the game, I think.
I know there's, on hinges themselves, I know there's so many factors that could come into it, but you sort of think when you're changing a hinge on site, I was very aware that if I drop this window, that's when the damage is going to, and that's when it's released. So I know it gets to, you've got every single screw that needs to fail, and ultimately you could argue that even the bottom ones, the top ones still hanging in. And, there's multiple points. And I've only ever seen one hinge go. And I can't say it was one of yours either on a job where they managed to let the wind blew it and it sort of...
In its own position.
Was just swung all the way back on itself. And it was... they'd managed to get it closed and tie it to the toilet sink or something. And I just turned up with a pair of hinges and I looked at it and I said, yeah, everything's all right. I swapped it out and it was no problem. Yeah. They couldn't believe that we just changed the hinges and that was it. I said, but they've taken everything. They took all that damage and they took all that pressure. Yeah. So yeah, probably let's tighten up the friction on them so it doesn't swing that way. And then it'll be fine. But
look, it's where we do differ. We test beyond our stated data sheets. I think that's really important. And we specify what screws you should use and where it should be reinforced and so on and so forth. It's getting more critical now. Windows are just getting heavier.
Yeah.
The biggest window we'll hold is 200 kilos.
Wow.
And you can't have that 60, 70 floors up. Drop it. Just can't have it. And the systems houses are equally concerned on that. So the testing with systems houses is rigorous. It really is. Particularly in big skyscrapers. Yeah. Pretty much every systems house will have their own testing. But in Southeast Asia, when the new product comes up, they will also do a separate test and window test and so on. Because it's too big a job to go wrong. Right? It takes one failure on your product. Regardless of whether it was your hinge or not that was a fault, it takes one failure to... India's a massive country, but it's a small rumour mill. And so, yeah, we can't afford that. So, yeah, a lot of testing. But what is nice, I've seen a definite twist, in that systems houses are working with hardware guys way more than perhaps was in the past. And it's making development so much easier because we're in at the early stages and we could do this, we could change that and allow us this bit more room and we can hold this bit more weight. That's been a massive shift that we've seen in the last 2 years.
Good to know. And I didn't realise I could hang off a window then and it would hold my weight.
There is a test called a falling window cleaner test.
Is there?
Yeah. And you just hook some weights and you shock and drop the weight. Now the hinge doesn't have to operate afterwards, but it has to, and I can't remember the time, but it has to hold a certain weight for a certain amount of time. Now, I mean...
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's called the falling window cleaner test. So...
If you need to do that with a person, I'm going to volunteer.
Yeah, maybe only from a yard off the floor will be fine, right? But traditionally, it's just you just drop weights on the bar and it holds. But yeah, that was always a falling window cleaner test. I remember the first time I was told about it. I was like, really? And I've always argued, I'm not sure why it's called a falling window cleaner test, because if they're cleaning the window, it's going to be shut, right?
Yeah.
How are you going to grab it? But that's what it was called. So, and that's why brand's so important. It's in big projects through to tiny projects, you want to fit and forget. You want to fit the product and forget it. We've got many customers that would call us a silent supplier. Not silent from a point of view of we don't see them or visit them, but we just don't register on their board. They buy it, they pay their invoice, and we send some more. And that's what we want to be. We're there whenever you need us. We're there when you want some support and change something or some development. But your day-to-day business should just flow through. Deliveries that turn up on time. You pay your invoices and we go again. We're 10 days out from having our fourth month of 100% OTIF.
Wow.
100% OTIF. And for us, that's really, really important. I mean, world class is considered 95, 96. And we can get to the end of June... And I think we're there for it. Be 100% OTIF, which is a massive, massive statement to make. And that's where this silent supplier comes in. And people say to us, well, we just place your order and it turns up. It sounds like we've reinvented the wheel, but we just do what we said. It's just very simple, having product available that works, goes out first time, and it's done. So really important, really important. Good products done well.
Yeah, that's quite a journey. So it's probably about time for the questions.
Yep.
So in the whole of your journey so far, is there a low point that sticks out for you?
Cool. A low point. Yeah.
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
Yeah, so I think a low point, which turned into a massive high, was when where there was a chance that Cotswold wasn't going to remain independent and was going to become part of a bigger group. And I think it would have lost the essence of what it was. And I remember sat there thinking, it's just, this is why we're different. This is us. This is Cotswold. And I think people want that and need that choice in the market. So there's a period of time for 3 or 4 months where there was a sadness about the brand and going to be dissolved, perhaps. I'm pleased to say that's turned into a high point because actually it's remained independent and we've continued the journey, which is great. But yeah, possibly when the brand was potentially going to go into a much larger group that would have maybe taken away some of the edge that we have. Mm.
And the flip side of that, unless it's still part of that one, but is there a high point that sticks out? Another high point, should we say?
Yeah, I mean, undoubtedly, one of the high points is just being empty of the business. I mean, it's something I always wanted to do. I guess that's what kept me driving, and that for sure would be a high point. But I look back now over the last 22 years, and there's just been an immense amount of fun times with customers, suppliers. I think the industry as a whole, I think it gets a bad rap. White gold, and everyone always talks about it. But I've had some great times in the industry. Generally have. And so just the people, the networking, and being able to head up a brand that you're so passionate about, I think it's just the whole package, if I was honest.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. What role were you before MD? What was your team?
So for operations director for the Southeast Asian business,
right?
When Cordwell came across, prior to that I was general manager of Cotswold. So when we were originally bought, I was general manager of this business. Then I was sales director.
Right.
And then when we had a change around, I moved from sales director into set up the Indian factory.
Right.
And the Indian operations. So been through a few. I guess at my core, I've been customer facing all my life, whether that's in a sales director role, customer services role, even setting up the Southeast Asian business, it was still with customers in mind and making sure the growth in the industry over there was successful. So 95% of my business is outward facing. But we go back to Leslie, my original boss who owned the business. She, the first 2 weeks you come into Cotswold, you're made to work on the shop floor.
Right.
It's not optional. It's you learn the product, you learn the people. And so whilst I was always outward facing, I understood the graft that went in to get the products to the customers. So I think that was really important. It gave me a good grounding.
Yeah, I like that. And then how long did it take you to decide to take the MD role?
Less than 3 seconds. Yeah, less than 3 seconds. Look, I've said it several times already on this cast that I'm deeply passionate about the brand. And to have the opportunity to head it up, put it in hands that I generally believe does things for the right reasons, for the best of the business, best of the brand, best of the employees, best for the customers. It was no time at all. I mean, I think 3 seconds was just so I took a breath because I was never going to say no to that. And there's a lot to do. Say the two people I probably got the most to thank for would be, say, Leslie, who was my original boss. She just understood me, I think that. And then Eric Mertz. He really polished off some rough edges. Still a lot there. Still an awful lot there. But he polished that off in a real way. And it made me a better person to take the role. So I felt ready for the role. Rather than just a guy who knew the business and knew the product and the industry, I knew how to run a business and make correct decisions and commit. There's a lot of times in the last year when we've made some tough calls, but we've committed to them and they've proven to be right. So they'd be the two main people that I would be thankful for, I think.
Mm. Wow. The last question, will these be the same people? If you had to spend 2 weeks on a desert island with someone from the fenestration industry, who would it be?
It's easy. It's easy. We've spoken about him already. It'd be Mark Bromley. Crazy, funny, caring. I mean, he's everything in one. We've roomed together for a couple of weeks before. We get on great. And you know what? He's got a family background in Avantis with Ryan, and Julie's always there, and Lauren's done some of the marketing. You know, they're just a great family. And I think my wife would also be happy that it was with Mark, because she knows he'd look after me.
Ah, oh, yeah, so, I like that.
So it's good.
Tim, thank you very much for your time today.
No, thanks for having me.
It's an open invitation. It'd be great to see what you get up to in the next couple of years. So you're welcome back anytime. But thank you very much.
Let's do it again.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.